Have like an understanding of that.
Yeah, just moderating, man.
Oh, you are, yeah, okay.
Right.
I'm John.
Oh, okay. Maybe I should move.
Well, you can stay wherever you.
Okay.
Oh, you can switch with me.
Yeah.
Richard's gift.
Should I record?
Yeah, we're actually recording right now, so whenever you're ready.
Should we stop?
Yeah.
So this workshop is a part of our Differing Perspectives on the Left series, where we talk to various organizations on the left, and today we'll be talking to John Sturgis.
Yes.
From the Inclusive Democracy Collective. And we basically put three questions to him, which were, what does your organization do? Why does it think this work is necessary? And how it goes about doing it? I'll just briefly introduce John, and then we can get right into the discussion. So John is a political activist and organizer in Paterson, New Jersey. He's also the assistant editor of the International Journal of Inclusive Democracy. He's a contributor to the book Globalized Capitalism, The Eclipse of the Left, and Inclusive Democracy. He's taught high school biology in Paterson, New Jersey for 26 years and also worked as a union leader. We're happy to have you with
us
today.
Thank you.
Divya.
Thank you. I brought our aims with us. Did everybody receive a copy?
No.
Just give a brief overview, and then we can you could read through that and have some questions if you like. I'm a little scattered right now. We spent 5 hours on the plane getting here. We got here a couple hours ago, so I've got some jet lag. So if I'm a little tongue twisted, don't worry about it. I'm not that crazy. Well, inclusive democracy didn't start out as inclusive democracy. It started out as a hard copy journal called Society and Nature, which was a journal of political economy, political ecology. And that was in 1992. And then in 1997, it was a choice to change the name to Democracy and Nature because we felt that the dialogue had changed from socialism to democracy since the fall of the Soviet Union. Actually existing socialism fell apart, and of course socialism became a dirty word. It doesn't work anymore, and it became sort of obsolete. So we thought the dialogue should change to a democracy, because that's what it's all about, in dealing with power. And then I think it was like in 2005, we were having problems with the publisher, and it was just getting more expensive. It cost like $75 a year to have a hard journal. We decided to do it online. So we started an online journal, and it's called the International Journal of Inclusive Democracy. And I think there might be some, the websites might be on, the links might be on there somewhere. And so I just want to give a little overview of what we're about, and then I can tell you some of the things that we do and why we do them. Today, it's acknowledged that contemporary society currently adopted the market economy and representative democracy as a way to become free. When Bush and all these people go to war in Iraq and stuff, they say, we're going to bring the market to them, free market and democracy, so that they can enjoy some road to peace and prosperity. Well, that's a lie. The market economy and representative democracy is going through a deep multidimensional crisis, which we are bearing the brunt of. And it's widened and gotten progressively worse in the past decades. Thus, the present crisis calls into question not only the structures that were established with the market economy about 200 years ago, first in England and then in the United States. I can tell you a little bit about that because Paterson, New Jersey was the first industrial city in the United States which was founded by Alexander Hamilton. Okay, now, Patterson wasn't called Patterson when they founded it. It was called the Society of Useful Manufacturers. So what these guys did was is they said, well, there's a falls in Patterson, 70-foot falls, and they said, oh, we could use this for a power source. And they said, well, let's put a factory here and build a community around it, you see? So in history, this is the first time that we have people coming together to live in a community based on the needs of private capital. And it totally just destroyed everything, okay? So, established 200 years ago with Alexander Hamilton, but also in this country, but also the values themselves are going through a crisis and that have sustained these structures. And that is the neoliberal consensus, where we have to have the free movement of labor, money, resources. From the ideal perspective, the concentration of power is reproduced by the dynamics of the system, that is the market economy or globalized market, and representative democracy. And this keeps the structure of power intact. It's a hierarchical structure, where it's a top-down thing. So these structures, of course, are built on power. The people on the top got the most power, and of course, the Occupy Wall Street brought that into real focus with their 1%, although we have a little problem with the 1%. It's actually more than 1% that controls more than everything else, but I can talk about that later. Okay, so, therefore, the obvious way out of this crisis involves the redistribution of power through the creation of a new institutional framework that ensures citizen sovereignty. The first objective of the ID project of social transformation is to recover the original meaning of democracy, the form of social organization that institutionalizes the direct exercises of sovereignty by the citizens themselves for self-determination, so that they have the equal sharing of power in all the different spheres, the economic sphere, the social sphere, cultural sphere, and the ecological sphere. Thus, the current regime is essentially oligarchic, right? It's a few people controlling everything, and it is also plutocratic because the money. So we have market economy, the money, and representative democracy, the oligarchy, controlling everything. So we have to, we are calling for a remaking of society with truly democratic means and ends. ID seeks to create a form of social organization that ensures the satisfaction of all citizens' basic needs and ensures the freedom of choice regarding work and consumption under equal conditions. This would be done with economic planning at the demos, the citizen assembly level. So the demos, or the citizen assemblies, would determine what the basic needs of people are. Whatever they decide. I mean, that's for future society to determine. And another element of ID is to achieve the necessary and sufficient conditions for the reintegration of society with nature. Again, for us, the market system is one where it employs man against man, human against human, and society against nature, and to exploit nature to its fullest. It's an instrumentalist rationalization to get out of nature whatever you can, and if things happen, if we have global warming, who cares? At the subjective level, though, ID is based on a conscious and responsible choice for autonomy. Everyone has to choose to be free. You can't have someone tell you that you're free. You know, and that's what representative democracy does. You see, because people give their power for decision making to someone you don't really know. And these people make decisions based on not your interests, but the interests of the people who keep them in power. That is the corporate structure of the money. So the choice is for autonomy, the choice for those forms of social organization that enable social beings to give themselves their own rules and make their own decisions. So that's what we want to do. We want to create a society where the people make the choices themselves. You want to know what we do, okay? Well, we are a small group in Patterson, and we do different things. We have forums on different issues. We have a book project. And Patterson has a population of 160 or 170,000 people. There's not one bookstore in the city. It's hard to believe in America,
and
not one bookstore.
Libraries.
And they closed libraries. The city closed libraries during the 90s. So we give away free books. We contacted libraries, private people, and they donate books to us. And we have a basement in an apartment complex that's about this size, and it's full of books.
And 2005, we gave out 10,000
books. Yes, we since then we've given out 10,000 books in 6 or 8 years here. And so it's amazing because even though there is no bookstore in Patterson, we gave away this many amount of books. But we're still finding it difficult to organize. As you know, most of the people who are organizers, people don't have the time. They're too busy trying to make living ends meet. They have 2 jobs, 3 jobs, kids, etc. And they really don't have time to sit down and discuss things. And you need that time to sit down and understand the enemy. So we try to do that. We hand out the aims. We discuss things with people. But we've been unsuccessful because we haven't gotten anybody into our group. We've tried study groups. And some people would show up for one or two readings, and they wouldn't come back again. So it's very disconcerting that people don't get really excited about changing their lives. You know? Another thing we did was the detainees. Right after 9/11, immigration, ICE, or whatever they're called, went around the country and started rounding up Southeast Asian men, brown-skinned men. It didn't matter if they had records or not. They just went into sweeps and grabbed people. And one of the dumping grounds where they were putting them was the jail, the county jail in Patterson. And they had something like 300 detainees in there. And so we decided to try to break into there and see if we could do something. Not break into the jail, but break into that system. That system and see if we could get these guys released. Well, I mean, that's a very long story, but we just had roadblock after roadblock after roadblock with us. They wouldn't tell us where these people were. Their families didn't know where they were. And to get in there, we had to have a name and their prisoner number or something like that. And so we had to go to ICE, we had to deal with them, and they're never there, they lie to you, they tell you all kinds of garbage. But finally we got it, and we were able to work with 3 of the detainees out of the 300 there. It was only 2, 3, or 4 of us, and 3 was all we could handle because we had to contact the families. They didn't even know that they could have lawyers, nothing, they didn't know anything. So we worked with them, and that was in 2002, 2003. And
by got a toll-free phone put in there for the
we
patients.
Got a toll-free phone because it cost them $20 to call out, to call their families after they knew that they could do this. So if any of you have been arrested, you know that the cost. So the 3 we were with were detained without charges. Without charges. They had no charges up against them. They were just detained.
They were musicians and artists.
Yes, musicians, artists. And after 2.5, 3 years, we finally were able to get them released because we were such a thorn in the sheriff's side and ICE side. We had actually, ICE had to come down and inspect the jail because these guys were getting beat up. What they would do is, they didn't like them, they'd throw them, they're supposed to keep them isolated from the regular prison population. If they did something or said something, they'd put them in with the regular population and they'd get beat up. So we had big, big, huge problems. One guy had to go to the hospital, and they wouldn't tell us that he was in the hospital. They said, well, you can't see him today. Well, where is he? Well, we don't know. You know, that type of stuff. Well, he was complaining he was hurt. So we'd go check to the hospital, and they say, yeah, he's here, but you can't see him. Why not? Well, you have to get permission from the sheriff's office to come to see these guys. So we had to get the runaround. It took us like 3 or 4 hours just to make the visit to the hospital to see this.
We also shut down the local military recruiting station.
Right. We picketed the local army recruiters, and we'd go in there, and they'd force us out, and we'd picket them and tell people that don't go in that building because they're murderers, etc. And one sergeant actually came out and whispered in my ear, I'm going to follow you home and kill you. So I go, all right, we're going to call the cops. Right, so we call the cops, and he leaves. He just takes off. Wow. Nothing happened. I wrote my senator, you know, the representatives, all my representatives. He got a mild reprimand or something. And then after that, they moved out of town.
Yeah, so we got him to leave. In Patterson, we have mostly poor people, and they entice them with these $40,000 sign-up bonuses and so on. Mm-hmm. And they even tell people that will expunge your records if you have any drug records or whatever. We'll expunge them so that you can become our military father. Right? Mm-hmm. And this is horrible how they do this. And once they get the people to sign up, I don't know what happens to the bonuses. I don't think they see them. Yeah, lie to them. That's what they do. Sorry.
I don't know. I guess I covered most of what we do there. Anybody have any questions?
I'm wondering about some of your ideological motivations. Like, who are the key thinkers or texts or movements that inspired your project? And, like, for example, who were you reading or what were you reading in study groups? And how do you see yourself as distinct from other tendencies or other groups out there on an ideological level?
Okay. I was going to do some of that tomorrow, but I'll get into it today. Yeah. Takis Fotopoulos was the founder of the journal, and he actually coined the phrase inclusive democracy. And inclusive democracy, well, the word inclusive sometimes causes problems with people because they don't know what you're including. What does that mean? Does it mean gender, race, color? You don't care about what gender or race people are and you include them in everything? Well, that's part of it. But the inclusive means that we want to have democracy on the social level, the economic level, the political level, and the ecological level. We need to have democracy spread across those so that there is no concentration of power in any hierarchical group that can control things. So we seek that equal distribution of power. And so Takis Fotopoulos is the main theoretical philosopher at the journal. And our study, we read his works. He wrote a book called Towards Inclusive Democracy. If anybody read it or heard of it, it's a very good book.
It's available online for you.
Yeah, it's free online. If you go to the website there, everything is free. It's a free online journal also.
Because we believe knowledge should be free.
And so when we do the study groups, we read Towards Inclusive Democracy. But we first start off with the aims, because the aims give the theoretical framework of what we're trying to do. And people should be able to accept those before they can move on, because there's some deep things in there. And so we read his text mostly.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I apologize for leaving the room for a little bit. I might have missed something. From the way that you described the way that you want sort of decision-making process.
The demos, you mean? The demos level?
How do you see your relationship or inclusive democracy relationship or difference with Occupy?
Okay. Another thing I picked up on here you want me to do, how we differ from the other groups. We are anti-systemic, and that means that we are opposed to a socioeconomic system and a value system that keeps the power structure in place. And we want to overthrow that structure. I think that defines what we are. And when we talk with groups and other people, that's the dividing line, if they're anti-systemic or not. And I asked one of the fellows, one of those people there at the Occupy thing, how are they not different from a reformist movement? And how are you different from a reformist movement? Because if you're not going to bring down that power structure, then you're still stuck in it. So that's the key determinant factor, that we're anti-systemic. There's the socioeconomic system, It's institutions and the values. Again, I said this before, the values are human over human and human over nature. So we want to have a complete overturn of how people think about their neighbors or humans, what human nature is, so that we can get beyond that and have a more equal and just society.
Just to follow up, sorry. Mm-hmm. So how do you pragmatically or practically attempt to do that?
Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, one other thing that we do. The only elections we believe in are local elections. Mm-hmm. And basically to educate people. We have to constantly educate people to what who the enemy is, what the problems are, the crisis that we're facing, and how we can change it. So we ran, one of our members ran for mayor of the city. We knew we weren't going to win, but we brought it out into the public sphere of Patterson of what inclusive democracy was, just to see if we could get more people and joined in that. And if he did win, the very next day, he would have, as the mayor, just dismantled that whole system. But he wasn't going to win. I mean, you have to have a lot of people to do that. But if you do have a lot of people and you can win, even at the ward level, you can take the resources in that ward and start changing them through the demos to determine what people's needs are. And using those resources there, we'll start changing things.
Hi. Yeah, I mean, your vision of what you want to achieve in terms of an overthrow of a socioeconomic system bears a lot of resemblance to the classless society that Marx and Engels envisioned and did a great deal of obviously work towards. I'm wondering, and of course that the Marxist tradition. I mean, I know that socialism is a bad word in the U.S. Like it's like calling somebody a bad name or something. But really, I mean, I'm just wondering how you would envision yourself in relation to the things that have been tried in the past in terms of like the workers' movement and Marxism. I don't consider the Soviet Union to ever have been Marxist, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think that it could happen at a state level at all. It was originally envisioned as an international movement, mm-hmm. And you're talking about overthrowing a system which really has to be international because you're going to be dealing with the system otherwise.
That's right. That's
how do you envision yourself in relation to the history of Marxism? Yeah.
Well, big question. Yes. Yeah. The situation with Marx is that his class analysis isn't useful anymore because it only related to the economic sphere. His classes were determined on the ownership of the mode of production. Okay? And then that everything falls into place after that. You have your hierarchical structures and a class structure in that. But it's only built upon the economic sphere. In inclusive democracy, we want to have a classless society where you have equal distribution of power, not only in the economic sphere, but in the social sphere. You see, because there was patriarchy before Marxism, and Marxism, through its class analysis of just economics, wouldn't get rid of patriarchy.
I'm not sure that's...
it's not economic. It has nothing to do with economics. There was patriarchy before Marx, and there was patriarchy after Marx, because there was no destroying or equalizing of power structures. Because in inclusive democracy, we want democracy in the household also, where democratic decision-making takes place in the household. You just don't have the daddy saying, you got to do this or that. So for us, first, his class analysis was only based in the economic sphere. And second, his historical materialism didn't pan out because he didn't take into consideration real freedom or creativity. You have this superstructure which determines your consciousness and you're stuck in it. Well, how do you account for artists who get out of that? How do you account for people who are extremely poor and get out of their class situation if they're not more creative or free than the people in their class? I hope I answered that. I don't know.
And may I say something here? He was for a while married to the national co-vice chair of the Socialist Party. That's me.
We were socialists for a while.
So this is actually like a personal system.
So it's actually a road of evolution, because we were searching for some answers. We were searching to see how we can achieve autonomy, how we can take away the concentration of power from few hands and have a more democratic way of living. And our quest led us to inclusive democracy. And this actually, I use it in my classes, in my syllabus, and I teach a course in racism, sexism, class and gender in the U.S., which addresses all these issues about class and about concentration of power and about how we use power in various ways, not just on race basis or gender and sex, but also ecological and environmental, and how Koch brothers, for example, they have performed so many environmental degradations, especially in poor areas where poor people live. And their factories are located where poor people live. And they, we can see that it has resulted in cancer in that area. People have died from cancer in that area. And nobody has addressed it. The representatives have not addressed it. You know, it's like they're supposed to be taking care of them, and now they are worried that, you know, we don't want to give them health care because that's a socialist practice to do, right?
Chris, did you have a question?
I did. So you talked about the market economy and representative democracy as a 200-year kind of history that we're in, but I guess my question would be, in terms of your vision of inclusive democracy, what are some historical examples that seem to point in that direction, either from recent history or from prior?
Okay. Well, you have the Paris communes. There are several instances where you have autonomy groups. Mm-hmm. Of course, democracy was invented by the Greeks. Right, Theo? But again, you see, they didn't have a real democracy. Right? They had a democracy only for a few people, right? The rich white guys.
Okay.
They didn't have it in the household or anywhere else. However, the concept of democracy still stands. It's where you have where you're autonomous, where you yourself make the decisions. You know, no one else tells you what to do or how to do it. Let's see, the Paris communes, there was another one somewhere, 1870s. Was that the Paris commune, 1870s?
Mm-hmm.
What about the 1840s? There was some revolution.
1848.
Yeah. I think there too there was, but it didn't last long. You can't, they don't like that stuff when people make their own decisions. Yeah.
I would like to ask how, I was a member of Inclusive Democracy, by the way, for several years. I know John. I want to ask how do you explain the fact that the ongoing movements are not influenced by projects like Inclusive Democracy or the Autonomy Project of Castoriadis or the Buxinet project, and to find inspiration and try to organize along these lines? Why these movements from below do not follow your paradigm? Yeah. Or education. How do you explain?
I think it's a matter of spreading the word, the knowledge of it. I don't think too many people in this country, anyway, are aware of inclusive democracy. Ed and Ben, they're saying like this is something different that they didn't hear of before, and so that's the big thing. I don't think a lot of people know about it, and it prevents. Some of those autonomy groups probably from joining with us. I think it's a matter of time, though, because we're getting to the point where the crisis is deepening, getting worse and worse and worse. that people will start going out to find real alternatives. And that's the other thing. I don't know how most of the other groups are all reformist groups. They don't give a real alternative. For instance, you were talking about the Soviet Union. That there wasn't a real alternative there. They had their own hierarchy, their own structure of people who owned the corporations, and it was a centrally decision making. It wasn't the decisions weren't made on the local level. It came from the party, whether they're Leninists or Stalinists or whatever.
I'm wondering. I guess I'm a little ignorant about some of the trajectory of inclusive democracy, like out of pre-existing projects. Like Taylor mentioned, like the Book Tonight tradition. And when I heard political ecology in '92, I also sort of thought of the Institute for Social Ecology.
Right. Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit. Are you part of the Book Tonight tradition?
No, I'm not. And also the Castorian, I am not. I know a little bit more about Bookchin, and I can tell you what. Right, so Watakis had a relationship with the Bookchin. Bookchin and Castoriadis actually were members of the International Advisory Board on the journals, and they left in the late 90s because there was some friction. But the critique of social ecology from the ID perspective is that we don't believe that there is a natural evolution of human nature to democracy. We don't believe that there's a natural evolution. It has to be a choice. It has to be an axiomatic choice that people make. I'll give you a good example. For humans to attain fulfillment and their own possibility, they have to have consciousness. An acorn, to grow into its fulfillment of a tree, doesn't need consciousness. You see, so for it naturally evolves into it. But for humans, we won't naturally evolve. If we did, we would all be democracy from 2,500 years ago. It would have happened already. See, so there's no evolutionary thing going on. It's a choice. You have to choose it.
So was that the issue that motivated the break with Fotopoulos and Bookchin? You mentioned there was some tension.
Yeah, well, I think, I'm not too sure, but I think Bookchin and Castoriadis had a problem that one thought they were going to influence the journal more than the other. But I'm not too sure. Theo might be more up on that than I am. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Bookchin thought that it took directions maybe postmodernist for his taste. Yeah. So he just abandoned the ship.
Right. And he also abandoned the anarchists also in the United States. He said they're just lifestyle anarchists.
I met him a few times. He's very crotchety and angry all the time.
Yeah, I met Bookchin too. He is crotchety.
So, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, I do agree that people are seeking alternatives, and and it seems, I mean, it's interesting to me. On one hand, is this along the lines, are you setting up communities of people where there's inclusive? I mean, is it like a 19th century utopian socialist form? Because you say you want to overthrow the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the question is sort of how will this spread, right? You can teach it to people, but there's still like a lot of, you know, the people who, you know, your opposition is very hierarchical, very well organized, lots of centralized power. The question is how to, you know, and you're running for elections, right?
Yeah.
Also, so I just don't quite understand how you intend to take on your opposition, which is the system, right?
Right. Yeah.
So how do, I mean, what do you intend to do? Just how do you intend to spread, or?
Well, yeah, we don't have communes or anything like that, where they are separate from society and are self-sufficient, where they can live off the grid and screw everybody else. You know, we're not that type of organization. We're just a regular grassroots organization where people have to come together, sit down, discuss things, and let that grow. And so, like I said, we only will confront local elections. We don't, the state, we want to abolish the state and all that. We would have, say, let's imagine it a little bit. Okay, say Patterson is an inclusive democracy. Okay,
yeah.
Now how's it going to spread to the other ones?
Yeah.
Okay, well, if they see how successful it is, okay, then they can confederalize. We can start sharing resources. And we would move that on to the state level too. It would be just a confederation, right? And power would be delegated at the confederal level. They wouldn't be representatives. Say the local demos says here's our plan. This is what we want, and we don't have the real resources for it. We got to get the resources from the other town. They got the water or whatever. So, where was I
going
with
that?
Okay, so we would confederalize with them and share the resources for the basic needs. Oh, this is what I get to. So the delegate that we send to the confederal level has to carry out what the demos says. He doesn't vote on his own. Like, our representatives just vote on certain things. We give them the power. But the delegates in a inclusive democracy have to carry out the policy that the demos determines.
How is that different from direct democracy?
It's direct democracy.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And if they don't, of course, they get recalled. I hope I helped you with that one.
Yeah, I just don't understand. Like, it just seems like I can't imagine that the powers that be would let this spread very far.
No, they wouldn't.
Say,
They would definitely come down on you.
So it's just,
You know, when Bill Clinton passed the NAFTA regulations, in Patterson, they had a soda bottling company for Coca-Cola. Right? It was like 300 people were employed there. And soon after NAFTA passed, they took their operation to Poland because the environmental regulations in Poland are much more lax, and they can pay the people cheaper rates, so they took it over there. Now, if people were thinking in terms of inclusive democracy, for example, they would have run the factory. The facility was there, the knowledge was there, and the market was there for them to do whatever. They would have run it, you see? But that didn't happen. That would have been one of the ways in which we can do these things, right? Take over things that, and then have the people participate in it and then share the power.
And then obvious question is, has then, in that scenario, that's like concrete, you're not operating in a void, and before you reach any of the next town,
right,
or the next state, market, or resources you need for operating, you have to deal with them, and they are not yet inclusive democracy.
That's right. Yeah.
In fact, you have no plan, or you don't know that there is any schedule that ever will, anybody else will.
That's
so
right.
How do you operate in real life, not in theory, you can write it down, that anything real is happening? And what I'm trying to say, it's not enough to say, okay, they'll take over the factory. They have to deal with other people who are not inclusive democracy delegates, et cetera, and operate ruthlessly and possibly unethically or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have better lawyers, and for every one of your lawyers, there have 1,000, et cetera, et cetera. And so it goes. So where are we? On the ground or in some utopia?
It's not a utopia. It's on the ground, but it's a very difficult one because people have to choose. People in this country don't like to choose. They think they're free. They think they choose, but they don't. They're given things and say, well, you have to choose from these. This is what we call free choice. So they're dumbed down. Americans, in a broad sense, general citizen, doesn't know anything.
We have to choose from two political parties all the time, right?
Yeah, the Democrats and Republicans have controlled this country for over 150 years. They're not going to let that go. That's a powerful machine.
I would like to know a bit more about how you criticize the Occupy movement from the perspective of inclusive democracy.
Okay.
Because I believe there were some articles in your
international
journal. What are the main points of criticism?
Yeah. Our main point of criticism is that it is a reformist movement that is making demands from the power structure, and you can't change anything that way. Again, the numbers, the 99%, and the 1%, it's true. The 1% have more wealth or control more wealth than the bottom 99%. But the next 10%, from 99% to 90%, that group also has more combined wealth than the bottom 89%. So it's actually 11% of the population that controls everything. You see, the 1% controls all that, but the next 10% also control more wealth than the bottom 89%. So it should be called the 89% rather than the 99%. But
although
just wanted more explanations on this.
I have a particular. Although certain people in Occupy or certain people have argued that Occupy does make demands on the powers that be, they explicitly do sort of have a line, quote unquote, on not making any demands because they don't want to give the appearance of sort of validating the current state. This is their self-conception.
Right. Well, my question was to this gentleman is, what's your alternative? What are you posing as an alternative then? Not you, but Occupy. Does anybody know? Are they proposing some alternative society? I don't know.
In certain instances, they do think that they can just spread the sort of the form of organization that they have implemented is spreadable. They do believe, many people, perhaps not all, do believe that through direct democracy, that is a way, for example, in London and New York, I've attended, or
Congress
events as well, they've made the argument, you know, this is just can spread. In London, they want to do a borough walk where they slowly bring indirect democracy into the boroughs.
Right. Part of our perspective on this is that I'm still tired there. I wanted to pick up on you said something there.
They feel they are sort of, they could slowly just expand through the form of politics that they've, well, the form of decision making that they've developed. Mm-hmm. That is a form of politics that can spread.
Right. Oh, this is what I want to say. Okay, the social movements have to be more than just gatherings of people who have the same values and the same concerns, and then go home after. You see? It has to be a grassroots level. It has to be located in every community. It can't, you see all these, I don't go to demonstrations anymore. You know, because what's really come of that? Okay? You go to the demonstration, and everybody's there, you got all the literature, you have all this stuff, everybody's excited, and then you go home.
And then
you wait for the next one. But what do people do on the local level, the basic grassroots level? And that's what has to happen.
But isn't phase two of Occupy, like after the encampment, isn't it all about these localized sort of issue-based struggles? Like in Boston, it's like tea writers union, like stopping fare hikes on the tea, or, you know, there are a bunch of like this phase two of Occupy is all about the localized struggle, and that is taken as the end, as the horizon. So how would ID
reaching out to the community
from that?
Reaching out to the community is the rhetoric that they're using.
So that's phase two. I'm not up on it. This is recent.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
through the winter, basically.
I believe that the difference would be that these initiatives are not heading for political power at the local level. They're just dispersed and then do not form a municipal movement that seeks to confederalize. They're not coherent. So just small initiatives to organize an election. Maybe from the inclusive democracy perspective, this would still not fit in the scheme or something. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on that. Yeah.
That the issue is power.
Right.
Chris?
Maybe to come back around to an aspect of the question that I posed earlier. So you talked about the multidimensional crisis. So is it that, on the one hand, inclusive democracy would be axiomatic.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, do you think that the system, you know, has a kind of expiration date that it can't go, you know? You know, in other words, the people will, in a sense, objectively have no choice but to, you know, reject the market economy and reject representative democracy because the multidimensional crisis is so thoroughgoing and deepening over time that it will compel people to adopt a different way.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's what I guess maybe, you know, rather than, because what I picked up on was not a strategy for taking power, but rather a kind of set of principles that offer an alternative to a system that is unworkable.
That's it too, but it is. It challenges the power because, like I said, if you could win the local election, even at the ward level, you would dissipate that power structure the next day after you win. You would say, well, we're not going to work with this finance committee, or you're just going to get rid of that hierarchical power structure. So it is about power, and that's the biggest thing, because market economy and representative democracy concentrates power into those few hands on the transnational level and even on the local level, to where people are just ineffective. I mean, these representatives are making choices that aren't good for us.
I mean, even protests, they keep you penned in. They don't let you come out and speak your mind. You know, they will let you say, you know, if somebody's allowing you to do this, are you really free? And also the airport security, that's ridiculous what they're doing to people.
Ed, did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's sort of your orientation, like the feasibility of systemic change begun through a local election. I'm wondering if you've had any engagement with the tradition of municipal socialism. I actually don't know much about it, but you know, it seems historically that this has been tried as a strategy.
Yeah, they tried it up in Vermont, I guess, with the Bookchin, but I don't think it was very successful. I mean, if it were, we'd all be municipalists now.
I'm wondering then, because you said you had the critique of social ecology for positing this human evolution to another stage, you could say, or another systemic form without the necessity of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So what would make, I guess in light of what you said recently, it's sort of hard to see that distinction, though. What would make the world safe for inclusive democracy? What is it, just sort of more consciousness raising and more opposing to this ideal, or do you see some kind of revolutionary politics as necessary? And if so, is there any politics today adequate to that task?
Well, today there aren't any. I don't see any anti-systemic movements whatsoever. And it's very difficult to do this because people are comfortable with even though they're suffering, they're comfortable with that. They don't want to change. Something new is not in their mindset. Tell people that they can choose, well, they don't want to do that. And so it's a very difficult thing. It's mostly education at this point. And then once you get the people with the knowledge of this, then they can start acting on it. Then you can start doing things. You can have the direct democracy taking over things. You can have students taking over schools. You can have people taking over offices, museums, or whatever.
I believe it's a counter paradigm, but not only via theoretical education, but in action.
Right.
You get the municipal election won, and then you apply democracy at the grassroots level. You have municipal supermarkets, for example. You educate people, more people involved, not with the illusion that you will win with this,
right,
but just bringing more people and resources in this project and
building it.
Then in the right moment, so to
tip
speak,
over.
Yeah, building it. That's a strategy, educational, but through political power on the grassroots level, I think, the idea behind this. But there are differences with similar projects.
For example, there is a project in Marinaleda, Spain, for example, where the people use their natural resources available to them, and they call themselves self-sustaining. But at the same time, they depend on their state to provide them with funds, right? And I was talking with the mayor, Gordillo, and he said he was worried for the young children because they don't understand the struggles that the their parents had gone through to make Marinaleda possible in the 70s, right? And now he says that people are too complacent and they just don't understand that the struggle's not ending. So there is one way of co-opting movements, and for municipalism that you were talking about. Okay, we'll give you your little pocket here that you can, you don't bother us and we won't bother you, that kind of stuff. But that's not what we are looking for, right? What we are looking for is everybody to have equal power sharing in decision making. Whatever you want to do. Like, for example, if you only want to work like 2-3 hours a day, that's all it is for you to meet your basic needs. Then you can pursue your arts or whatever else you want to do. Because life is not just about making somebody else rich at your labor and then die. That's what happens. You wait for retirement to do all these things that you wanted to do and then you're too tired. Right? Yeah.
We should probably wrap up now. We have a continuation of this series of workshops tomorrow. We have workshops from 11 to 1 10. p.m. From
10,
10 to 12. From 10 to 12, and then a break for lunch, and then three panels, and then our plenary in the evening. So thank you, John.
Well, thank you. I hope I answer some of your questions. And so tomorrow,
you'll be more refreshed.
There's also inclusive democracy.
This is
number nine.
It's
a panel.
So there's not plenary tonight.
No, there's not, unfortunately, because we had pullouts.
For that, Taylor.
Well, we had, including her, we had 4 people left, but even not including her, we had 2 people left. It's going to increase.